Hello, welcome to Tales from the Potting Bench. I'm Adam, a gardener, writer, and podcaster with a passion for hearing people's stories and sharing them with you. Before we get into this week's episode, I'd like to ask, if you listen to this podcast and enjoy it, then please consider rating and leaving a review on your podcast platform of choice. It's easy to do, takes a few minutes of your time, but it helps this podcast get into the ears of more like-minded planty people. I'm thrilled to say that this podcast continues to be sponsored by the wonderful people at PlantGrow, producers of award-winning organic compost, mulch and fertiliser made with zero chemicals. Great for your garden and even greater for the planet. And I know because it's all I use on my garden. Don't forget, if you use the code POTTINGBENCH on plantgrow.co.uk, you'll get 10% off your order. We're now in the sixth season of this podcast, and this time we're doing things slightly differently, as over the course of the coming weeks, we'll be hearing from some of the most interesting women across the UK as I bring them together in what I'm calling a celebration of women and plants. I'm constantly interested by the women around me in the garden world, and it's high time that we're able to bring them together and share their passion with them. So, let's introduce my next guest. Sometimes we gain inspiration from the gardens around us, from the books we read, and also from the television that we consume. We're lucky to have so many wonderful gardening television programmes now, and one such show is the sensational Garden Rescue. Rosie Irving is one of the producers on that programme, and in this episode today, we discuss all the behind-the-scenes goings-on with what it takes to make that show. Rosie is also a complete font of knowledge when it comes to plants in general, so this is an episode that you won't want to miss. Enjoy. So, for anyone who is not familiar with you right now, who are you and what do you do?
Right, my name is Rosie and I am a horticultural producer for TV gardening programmes. I am a complete plant and colour lover and I just love people and life.
You do. Oh, you've summed yourself up so well there. Anyone who hasn't met you really should try to meet you at some point because you are an absolute bundle of positivity and I think you're such a joy to be around. We've only actually met once, which it feels like it's been more than that because I think we've talked online for quite a while and what have you, but yeah, you're so much fun to be around. But we'll get into all the many facets of what makes you. So let's go back to what you've said, horticultural producer. What so for anyone that doesn't know what that means, what does that actually mean?
Okay, so basically it is somebody who's worked their way up in TV from the very beginning, which is runners, researchers, and then you become assistant producer and producer. So a producer actually comes up with ideas for the programs, sources the materials and the items, puts it together, helps with the scripts, liaises with the presenters, often goes on to the shoots and sets it all up behind the scenes and just makes sure everything runs the way it's supposed to.
So only almost just the most important person in the whole thing.
Not really.
But without you, it wouldn't be smooth, would it?
Well, there's always someone that wants to be a producer that's in the wings. So there's always all the way down the line. And it's a team. It's a team effort. It doesn't work with one person. You need everybody and you need everyone to do their bit. And they do.
Occasionally, I'll see an arm or I'll see the back of a head and I think that's Rosie. But if you don't know, then you are kind of in that unseen world, aren't you? In your kind of day to day, you're responsible for so much, as you said. I know you said it's a team, but you are responsible for so much of that. But you aren't visible in that way, are you?
Yeah. And that in itself has its charm. And it's you sort of feel like a proud mum watching your kids at sports day, you know. Because at the end of the day, we can do all the background work and prep, but if your presenter can't present, then it doesn't happen. No. And so the people that present are incredible, and I've got huge respect for them. And like I say, I feel like a proud mum watching them as they're they obviously have knowledge as well, but they're busy. So we are putting the program together, so we know what it's all about. And their ability to pick up on that and just deliver it really quickly is phenomenal. And, you know, it just makes for a great atmosphere on set too.
Yeah, of course. You said about it quickly there, and I kind of want to come back to the elements of kind of garden rescue and stuff, but I don't want us to gloss over kind of, you've mentioned in a way how you go from runner to researcher, assistant producer to producer. So did you start presumably as a runner? Was that Gardener's World?
Yeah, I was the oldest runner.
This was, anyone that doesn't know Rosie, this was only last year. She's achieved an incredible amount in a year. How long has it been since you've been doing this then?
I'm an old duffer.
You said that, not me.
Yeah, you know, well, I thought I would. It's about 15 years, so I haven't sort of always done that, but it's about 15 years.
But gardening is the thing. Were you a garden lover, presumably, before all of this?
Yeah, I was a garden lover. Both my parents were gardeners, and actually organic gardeners, which, you know, was quite something in those days. And so, yeah, I would always been around plants and veg and that sort of thing. But what happened was I got it into my head that I wanted to be in Dorset, right. And I found this, it was basically a big chunk of land with planning permission to build a house,
right.
But in order to get it cheaply, it had what they called an agricultural tie,
right.
So it meant that you had to be either a farmer or involved in gardening. I like to do things properly. So although I knew about gardening and I dabbled, I thought, yeah, but this is like a big responsibility. So I started studying, and then a bit like the TV stuff, I got hooked on studying. So I did like an amenity horticulture, and then I got the RHS. So it was a general advanced diploma degree. Then I went sideways and did garden design and plants and planting design. I thought, whoa, Rosie, stop.
Slow down. Yeah.
Yeah, you've got a house to build here or to have built. And I got all this land. And the guy that sold me the land, he'd sold all the topsoil because he'd started a wildflower seed business.
Right.
So there was I with this land with no topsoil. I mean, brilliant seed views.
Yeah.
Silly gales to, you know, to bring you back down to earth.
Yeah.
And I was, good almighty, what have I taken on here?
Lord.
And my partner at the time was working during the day. So it was brilliant. I used to grow like veg and plants on a big scale, and I'd sell them to the local delis and restaurants.
Right.
And that, you know, because it was just great.
Yeah, I bet.
And I've got all this knowledge from all this studying, and which I was putting into practice. But the thing is, Adam, it's a really solitary life.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyone that, you know, flower farmers today, they relate to this.
Yeah.
It's lovely, you're surrounded by it, but you're not seeing anyone all day, and you're not, you know, and you're just with your plants.
Yeah.
So a friend of mine from college said, oh, do you know what? The BBC are looking for people to join the Gardener's World teams.
No way.
I'll have someone to talk.
Yeah, because that's the thing, isn't it, with planty people. I think we say about you kind of being positive and sociable, but I think inherently most of us are incredibly social, although, you know, some of us are kind of shyer than others. But I think we all also just love talking about plants, don't we? And I think, do you know, we also, you're fairly lucky, obviously, because your wonderful partner Michael, and I'm sure you're talking about plants all the time, but a lot of gardeners, either professional or amateur, don't necessarily have a partner that they share that interest with. So you kind of, you're going out, you're enjoying your garden, and you're desperate for, I know personally, I love my wife, but she's not really interested in the garden in the same way that I am. So when those kind of shows come around and you get to see all your friends again and talk about the plants, it's you want to be around other people talking about plants, don't you, as well? You know.
You do, you absolutely do, and especially if you're on your own growing them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, quite a lonely life, isn't it, as a flower farmer, in a way?
Absolutely. Absolutely. But so that was it. So I went and I had a choice. I could have been a researcher or a runner. I got accepted for both. But I knew a lot about plants, but I knew nothing about TV.
Yeah.
So I thought, right, I'm going to go in as the oldest runner. And so that way, I'm not, the expectations aren't so high.
Sure.
And so I can learn about TV whilst I'm doing my job.
Yeah.
And because I was confident, you know, because I knew my plants. And that really stood me in good stead, because none of the lot from that year got asked back.
Right.
Because they all went as researchers, whereas I did, because I had they had less expectations.
Sure.
And then, of course, you pick it up because it is a completely different world, world.
Yeah.
And so that's how it happened. And in actual fact, from those days, from the Gardeners World days, 15 years ago, I think there's only three of us that are still in the business.
Wow.
But that's not just because of whatever. It's quite hard because you don't get a year's contract.
No.
So if you've got a mortgage to pay,
and it's not consistent, is it?
It's not. And it's you have to have another source of income.
Sure.
Otherwise you just can't do it.
No.
And so that's another reason why it's not that easy to stay in it.
Yeah, of course. So 15 years ago, where was Gardeners World then? Which garden was it?
That was what I call the show garden. It was the field.
With
Toby and Alice.
Right, gosh. That's a totally different garden as well as to what people see now, isn't it? Yeah. That's what's amazing about it. I wish all those old episodes were on iPlayer that you could go back and watch. Because, you know, I mean, you go back, I'm in Birmingham, as you can tell from my accent, yes. As you know already. But, you know, you go back, anyone that's watching it now, obviously we all see Monty's Garden and Adam's Garden and Francis and whatever. And not knowing ever that there was a Gardeners World garden in Birmingham.
Yeah, exactly. And bizarrely, when I moved to Shropshire, I didn't know it, but I... 10-15 minutes from Monty.
Yeah.
Because ultimately I became one of Monty's researchers. So
yeah.
There were two of us in a go. So it was quite a nice thing.
I bet,
to,
yeah, that was great. God, and, so and you I, must have loved it then to have wanted to continue that. Was Gardeners World is a beast of a program, isn't it? So beloved by so many millions of people.
I love it. No, I love that. It suits my personality because it's lots of different things. So
absolutely.
I'm always having ideas, so I can just disgorge the ideas out to the team, and then they sort of formulate them into something workable.
Mm-hmm.
And then we do it, and then we move on to another project, and that suits my sort of grasshopper brain.
Yeah.
So it's, yeah.
So it started with Gardeners World. Where did you then? So how long have you been there, and what was next after that?
Oh yeah, so it was Gardeners World, but also offshoots like the flower shows. So I did Gardeners World Live, and I did Malvern and things like that. And then I was sort of approached to go to Spun Gold, and basically that's when we started Love Your Garden.
Right.
And if you think about it, there hadn't been like a big makeover show since Ground Force.
No.
So I was in on that from the beginning. And it was terrifying.
Oh, I bet.
Because at that stage I was project managing.
Right, okay.
So, and project managing, for people that don't know, is what it says, is you have to get all the materials for the makeover, including the plants, not just the plants, but all the hard landscaping. And then you have to coordinate deliveries. And you can't have all the deliveries turning up at once.
No.
Because it's chaos.
Yeah.
And lorries and that in small cul-de-sacs. And you have to supervise that. And then there's a lot involved, and then just nerves kicking in. You think, I can imagine
there's been some horror stories. We won't go there. So you're that was Love Your Garden, but you've also done Garden Rescue and all sorts of things, haven't you? You really have.
Well, I think it sort of all came, it all coincided with a renaissance in gardening programs, because I sort of once said to the exec, well, you know, why weren't there more gardening programs? And he said, well, the TV companies do surveys, and what they find is that pure people that just want gardening are quite small in number, and it's all about the ratings. And so to get the partners watching telly, you can have a gardening program, but you have to widen it out, the scope, include a bit of what's going on in the local environment, a bit of history, a bit of cooking. And so that's why you don't get a pure gardening program. And that's why Gardener's World is unique, because BBC allow them to do pure gardening.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. I think there's a thing with the makeover genre, I suppose, because it's not just exclusive to gardening, you know, it's kind of interiors and all sorts of things, really. There's an element of it that it's not a pure reality program, but there's an element of it where you bring in some of the, you know, for want of a better word, the drama of reality, because there is this element, obviously, that you're incredibly beholden to time. You just are, and I think that's. I do think that anyone watching thinks that miraculously that you know you've actually got weeks when you've only got what it, you know, and that's just not the truth of it, is it?
No. The Love Your Gardens were 5 days. Last year, a couple of years ago, that it got cut down to 4 days. But that was because the TV companies don't have the budgets that they used to have, and so we have to make it work on a reduced budget. And that's why you'll find there's quite a lot of revisits now, because you can't make a program if you haven't got a full budget. But what you can do is you can rerun an original episode, but then see how it is in a few years' time.
And then
do something there. So this year you should be seeing Garden Rescue Revisits,
right? Okay.
Which I worked on last year with Charlie. So, and that was great.
I bet that's lovely to be able to go back and see those, though, isn't it? Because I think I always find that when you watch a makeover thing, and you always think there's an element of you when you get to the end of it, you kind of want to see that a year later, and just to see how the you know, the people involved have got on with it, and how the garden has perhaps matured slightly and kind of bedded in. And I think that's lovely to go back and be able to see that, isn't it, with the garden?
It was fascinating. I mean, I loved it, because I was going with Charlie and we were just nattering about, oh yes, you remember that and that and that and that. And then Charlie was, you know, I better not say too much, because obviously it's not aired yet. Yeah. So, but it's charming, and it's a really nice way of, as you say, seeing how people got on with it, how it transformed their lives as well.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I think, have there been any kind of horror stories? I mean, in terms of you've just had, I mean, there must have been, but in terms of either being really, really genuinely close to the wire, or, you know, it's gorgeous on the first day and then suddenly it lashes down for the remaining 3 days or whatever. What have been the worst that have happened?
But that's quite common, actually.
Well, it's UK, isn't it? It's the peril of being here.
But on these makeovers, because you can't just say, oh, well, we won't do it today, we'll do it tomorrow, because it's all budget orientated. You've got expensive cameras, camera crew, directors, sound men. So you have to get on with it. And quite often, you know, I'm as I say, it's exciting, but there's no glamour. And it's quite often, my favourite thing is to put a bin liner when it's raining. So, you know, there's like a hole in the neck and for the arm. And that goes on under my jacket. And it's really funny, because often the directors sort of start off, oh, no, I don't want a bin liner. But then I'm all snug and warm and dry. Yeah. And then they go, well, actually, Rosie, could I have that bin liner?
Only a matter of time before they're desperate for that bin liner.
So yeah, I've done makeovers where it's non-stop rain. And you have to be mindful of the soil, because you don't want to muller the structure.
Of course,
it's quite a thing. But I think one of at the very beginning, one of the first Love Your Garden makeovers I project managed was in Wales.
Right.
And it was the responsibility. And it was based on Vedu, this beautiful garden in Wales. So we were inspired by Vedu. And for anyone that doesn't know it, you should. VEDDW,
yep.
Amazing, created by them, to lovely Anne and Charles. And part of it is theatrically curved hedges. And so we were inspired for this garden to recreate that.
Right.
And you've got a limited budget because you can't get plants free very often because they're generic. So you can't generally associate them with a company.
Of course.
And they don't easily associate. So we'd had a limited budget. So I'd only had enough money to get one long row of hedging plants. And the series producer came up to me and said, you know, Rosie, we've only got one shot at this.
And the idea, no pressure like that, is there?
No, the idea was that Alan was going to cut curves into the hedging, but that I always have to be on hand to finish off what the presenters don't have time to do because they get on to, even though they want to, they get pushed on to another item.
Of course.
So I'm getting really quite sick with nerves.
I'm tense listening to this. I'm so tense.
I mean, I'm clutching my hands now as I record it. And so I rang lovely Charles and said, Charles, would you be willing to come along and, if necessary, help me? Because I'm thinking, if I get that curve wrong, you know, it's
going to... Well, it's gone, hasn't it? Yeah.
And so he was lovely and said, yeah, of course, Rosie. So I'm like, oh, okay, Charles is there, all right. But as it turned out that Alan loves doing topiary.
Oh, okay.
And Niwaki had helped me out and they lent me some lovely shears. So they're all sharp and new and that. And Alan just said, it's all right, Rosie. I love doing this. And he was brilliant.
Oh, I bet.
And so Charles didn't have to do anything, but he got a great insight into how a TV program was made. So I was like, oh God,
that could have gone so much worse, couldn't it?
Oh, I mean, and there's always something like that. I mean, a couple of years ago, it was a heat wave.
Right.
Really, really, when we're doing a makeover, I'd Love Your Garden. And I've got all these amazing plants. And I said, they're going to frazzle because I had to get them before. So what I ended up doing? Hiring the conference room in the hotel because it was air conditioned.
Oh my Lord.
And then sort of spreading a great big tarp on the carpet.
Oh,
and
all these
plants were in the conference room. So staff are coming in and going, what?
That's the thing, isn't it? Is those, you know, those brand new plants that just haven't had time to kind of acclimatize or whatever, if you're working in those kind of conditions. And also I was just thinking as well, if you've got a design that's got painted wood or painted fences and it's lashing it down, obviously you just can't do that, can you?
Oh, you can. Oh yeah,
you can.
You've just reminded me of another awful one.
Oh no.
I was with Francis on that one. And it was a really sad story. It was a mum who died of cancer and she left a 13-year-old daughter. And the grandma had effectively adopted her. But they had a tiny courtyard garden. And obviously, each needed their own space. You know, they were each grieving in their own different ways.
Yeah.
So the design that we came up with was a clever way of making it separate. I put wheels on containers and big plants in them, so you could make your separate areas, but then you could wheel them into the side.
Incredible.
And I also, we did a hangout hut. We turned the shed into a hangout hut for the girl. But on the day that we were doing it, it was lashing down with rain. And honestly, as I was painting, the paint was just dripping straight off. But you have to carry on doing it.
Of course you do,
and
yeah.
do the best you can. And I remember Francis and I were soaked right through down to our knickers.
Oh, good Lord. So what did you do to stop it then? Were you just, had you just got umbrellas over it or whatever?
Yeah, we would sort of some sort of canopy, but it was a very small courtyard, so there wasn't the usual, you couldn't put a gazebo up, and then you just have to keep painting until it takes, and you just keep on.
Those days also must be, I mean, we're kind of joking about it, but they must be incredibly fun as well, you know, those days, even when it's raining. But I bet you're going home absolutely knackered at the end of these days, shoot days, aren't you?
Oh, totally. Because you're mentally and physically drained. Because I'm mentally drained because I'm thinking, well, if I remembered everything, have I got everything everyone needs?
Yeah.
And then you've got to react to situations. You know, things change, and you've just got to be able to say, right, okay, we can't do that now. Let's think of something else. Yeah. And that's why the presenters are so great, because they react to, you know, they have to. It's definitely teamwork, Adam. Definitely.
Yeah, I bet. I think there are, because this, in terms of listeners of this podcast, it's right kind of a broad demographic, but there's quite a lot of younger people. And I guarantee there'll be people listening thinking, I'd love to get into this somehow. If you were to offer any kind of advice as to someone of how to, not how to get in, but how to kind of make themselves stand out, I mean, what would you suggest?
It's a difficult one, really, because it depends on your personality. You don't have to be an extrovert, but you have to be reliable, and you have to just keep on. And it's the same with trying to get into it. You just have to keep on persevering. And there isn't an easy way into it, I'm afraid. It's you're either lucky, or you make such a nuisance of yourself that they say, okay. I mean, volunteering to help, but that doesn't always come off. But if you volunteer to help, then you've got to help.
Yeah.
It's not just going along with your packed lunch and having a nap. You've got to be useful.
You've got to get stuck in,
I suppose it's persuading the production companies that you have got something to offer, and that you can be useful and a good member of the team.
Yeah.
And then once you've got your foot in the door, once you've done one, I mean, it doesn't always happen, but if you get on well, and you know, you don't make any great boo-boos or mistakes, then the chances are they'll ask you back again.
Yeah, that's brilliant. I mean, it must be such a, incredibly hard work, but it must be such a good hoot, because you've got a good crowd of presenters and stuff as well. Fantastic people on these shows that you've done.
Oh, unbelievable. And it is. And that's how you get through it, with a sense of humour. You know, you have to, and what you were saying about other things. I mean, there's many a time we've been finishing off a makeover as it's getting dark.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're throwing things at it. Running curve, and like, oh God.
Yeah, I think they're such brilliant shows. I think Garden Rescue as well, and Love Your Garden. I mean, they're just such great shows, because I think you also come away with such incredible inspiration as a viewer as well for some of these things. And quite often, I mean, they're all, what is brilliant about these is they're all sorts of real gardens. That's the thing, is, you know, they're kind of average sized gardens. Some of them are slightly oddly shaped, but generally, you know, you're thinking of them as this is representative of my kind of average garden. And I think some of the stuff you do, because you're obviously trying to think about form and shape and structure and trying to really use the space, I think the inspiration that you get from some of these is incredible.
There's a really good team of designer presenters on Garden Rescue, and you know, they do all the designs, and they have to cost them, because it's based on the homeowner's budget. Sure. And because it's BBC, we can't just manipulate that budget. It's, if that's the budget, that is what you have to design it to, buy the plants to. And it's very clever, really good presenters, and as you say, it's for all different types of people and all different types of shapes of garden. So that is, and I think that's really inspirational for your average gardener. You can take a lot from that. Whereas Love Your Garden is are just wonderful. And with Love Your Garden, you are actually helping really deserving people.
Yeah.
And I've done a lot. And yeah, it always makes my heart just go, oh, we've really helped these people.
But that also tells you about the real power of a garden, doesn't it? And I think we, you know, sometimes I think we kind of trundle through our own gardens and whatever, and we have those moments where we stop, don't we? And we really appreciate our own gardens and what they do for us and the time that they give us and the space that they give us. But I think when you see some of these, you really think, actually, no, you've created a garden that is absolutely changing that person's, you know, life and the space that they've got to enjoy, etc.
Totally. I mean, and I still get messages from the garden owners. Yeah, and you know, saying even in the winter we're still enjoying this garden, and our disabled son, for instance, is just loving the fact that he can now be out in his wheelchair, but he's experiencing nature. So that's really satisfying.
Yeah.
Really, really, yeah.
I can imagine.
And just helping them. Yeah. And even for young people too, we've done lots for them, and it's hugely satisfying.
Yeah, I can imagine. Speaking, this is an incredibly tenuous link, so forgive me. But speaking of gardens of all shapes and sizes and all sorts of different types of gardens, one thing that I think perhaps some people might not be aware of, although I think a lot of people, if they know you already, will know, is these tours that you do with your partner Michael. So let's just mention Michael, because we've said Michael a couple of times, and we're not giving poor Michael a surname. For anyone that doesn't know, who is your partner, Rosa?
Right, Michael is Michael Marriott.
He'd never forgive us, would he?
No, and apparently he's a world rose expert.
Apparently.
Yeah.
It's not like he's written any books or had any important roles.
Roses. And what's lovely about Michael is he's so mild-mannered, and he doesn't have an ego, you know, considering he is a world rose expert and that everybody goes to him when they need advice, you know, all over the world. I mean, he's off to Italy this weekend to give some talks and stuff. Yeah, and so, yeah, he's great. I mean, we're totally different.
Yeah.
Totally different. And so that's what makes we run these tours. We decided to do these little one-day tours.
Called Todd Tours. What does the Todd stand for anyone that doesn't know?
Two old duffers.
I love it. It's brilliant.
Duffers are taking people around on these tours. But between us, we have a great knowledge of all the different gardens.
Course,
and we each bring something totally different to it, and as well as different personalities, but different knowledge sets. Mm. And it's brilliant. And we keep the numbers small, because I like the dynamic that builds up with the people on the group, and even if you go on your own, you don't stay on your own for long. The groups sort of absorb you, and if they don't, we do. And then we see 2-3 gardens, and the garden owners are wonderful, and it's just a wonderful day out, and it's nice sharing our knowledge and the garden owners' knowledge, and also the people on the groups, because a lot of them.
Oh God, yeah. I've been on one. I went on the one last year, which was kind of in Shropshire, which was brilliant. And there was a garden on that I'd not been to, and considering it's not that far away, I have been since, actually, which was Wallerton. I just absolutely adored Wallerton. But I think you've kind of summed up my experience of a Todd tour, and I knew one person on that tour, but then you come away knowing absolutely everybody, and you've chatted to everybody, and you've made some friends, and such brilliant days. Because I think what you're also getting is, more often than not, you get to meet the people behind the gardens, and you've got, I mean, I'm not just saying this because I'm talking to you, but you have got you and Michael, who are both incredibly knowledgeable, but in different ways, but that really complement each other. Because what I also love about it is it's not just a group of people wandering around a garden. You're getting you're talking about plants, you're getting all of the history of the gardens as well, which is incredible. And forgive me, there was one, I can't remember the name of it, but there's the one with the large lake in the middle that had been rebuilt, that was, and he was a private or a colonel or
oh yes,
I can't remember the name of that garden, but it got the steps up to the house from the lake.
It's going to kill me.
I can't remember which one, but it was gorgeous, absolutely gorgeous.
And it's really close to Woollerton.
Yes, oh, yeah, not far. And it's got all of the big gunnera around the lake. Yes. I can't remember, but I remember you were talking about all the history of it, and that was so interesting because within that you're understanding how that garden was designed and why it was designed like that. And I also think what you've got with these tours is that sometimes, yes, they're within a county, but you know, in some small counties, I mean, Shropshire's not tiny, but relatively in comparison to some others, you go to three gardens that are climatically, if that's even a word, similar, but also different, because Woollerton and this one that neither of us can remember the name of, totally different gardens, you know, but the same county.
Yeah, I agree. No, and that's what I try and do is I do try and get contrast so that you're not just seeing more of the same.
Yeah.
And if there's always something different, like the Dorset tour. Mm. The Dorset tour is three really different gardens. You know, you've got Dorset Walled Garden, which is just full of roses and romance and designed by the Bannermans originally, and then you go on to the Makepieces, and the Makepieces have a his and her garden, which is a bit similar to Michael and I. We have his and her gardens, but he is the most extraordinary furniture maker, and you go into the house and you say, oh my goodness. And then we end up at Charlie McCormick, who's married to Ben Pentreath, who's quite a famous architect and has redesigned the Morris fabrics and brought them up to date. And Charlie is so charismatic, and he's got the most amazing garden, and he makes the most amazing cakes.
Yeah, brilliant.
So it's three very different things, and we just reel away from there. And it's the same with the Sussex tour, Grave Tie, Neck, totally different. Yeah, the head gardener's so knowledgeable, and you know, Grave Tie was William Morris, the godfather of naturalistic planting, and then we moved to Knepp, which is 21st century interpretation of naturalistic planting. Totally different, but relatable.
Yeah, I think they're incredible, and I mean they're all over the UK and Ireland and all sorts of, but Ireland's the one that I'm desperate to do to see Jimmy Blake's garden, but I think they're incredible. Such a fantastic way to also meet people as well. For anyone that hasn't seen those, you've got a website for those, haven't you?
Yes. Well, it's via sort of Michael's. So just type in Todd Tours and it will come up on Michael's webpage on his website.
Brilliant.
And that will show the current tours. So, yeah, thanks for mentioning those.
No, I think they're so good. I'd have mentioned them even if I hadn't been on them. But genuinely, such a fantastic day. And bizarrely, we had rain most of that day, but it made absolutely no difference whatsoever. We all just cracked on, and it was such a great day. I genuinely didn't want it to end because it was so, so great. I need to come on another one, don't I?
You do.
I will. Yeah. I have a look at the website when we're finished.
I hope you can, because you fitted in really well, and you'll get so much from the they're very different gardens to the ones that we saw in Shropshire.
Yeah, I can't wait. Do you know, something that we haven't actually mentioned that I meant to mention while we were talking about the TV is that you recently worked on a series with Jamie Oliver, hadn't you? Do you know when that's out?
It will be coming out spring. I think it is spring. Wow. Okay. Yeah, and it's a seasonal. So we went through the four seasons, and when I got that gig, because I'd worked with Jamie before on an ad. Mm. He'd done an ad for frozen peas, and I'd had to recreate an allotment on a stage in a studio in London, and he was and that was part of that. So I'd worked with him then, and so the team knew me, and the director knew me from yet another weird program I worked on called Crazy Delicious.
Oh, I remember.
Crazy Delicious. I had to get that was in Elstree, and that was in a studio with no natural lights, and we had to hit out the whole studio with plants that were living. I had to keep it alive for a month.
God.
And it shorted the electrics a couple of times, but it was in the same studio where the iconic Morecambe and Wise programs were filmed. So history there. So that was weird, but amazing. And the director on that does a lot of Jamie Oliver's. So, you know, we got on well, and, you know, I did a reasonably good job. And so that's how it works.
Right.
And so I got a phone call and say, yeah, we're doing this seasonal program about Jamie growing and cooking.
Hmm.
Do you want to be involved? What do you think, guys?
No, I'm a bit busy this year, actually.
So it was four distinct blocks, so four distinct seasons, so spring, summer, autumn, winter. And it was just almost one of the best experiences ever.
I bet.
Such a lovely man. And it's his production. And a lot of the people there have worked with him for like 20 years. So that tells you a lot about Jamie the man.
Yeah, of
not
course.
Just Jamie the presenter, Jamie the man.
Yeah.
It's wonderful. So I think that's coming out in the spring, but it turned out it is more cooking than growing, but we still got a bit of growing in there.
That's going to be fantastic to see. Can't wait to see that. And especially kind of taking you through all of the seasons as well. That's great, isn't it?
Yes.
Can't wait. That'll be on Channel 4, I presume.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Brilliant. All right. Well, we all look forward to that. Well, Rosie, it's come to that point, it's come to that point where I've got three questions for you. I say three questions. There are two questions and then one that you're actually going to write yourself, but I'll get to that in a minute. I'm making this scarier than it needs to be.
I'm sitting here.
Edge of your seat. I can see you shuffling forward.
I sort of feel like I'm like a hostage now.
No, don't worry. You're not meant to feel like that. Oh, dear. Right. Well, let's ease you in with question number one. Question number one. What is one plant that you always struggle to grow and just cannot get along with?
Cleome.
Okay.
Annuals, really, and they flower for ages, and they've got really long seeds, and you think because they're long seeds they'll be really easy to grow, but I can't get them to germinate, and yet other people seem to, and this and I've been sent some seeds from some, you know, lots of lovely people have, you know, sort of been sending me things, and I'm thinking, and I'm literally circling them and thinking, oh my god, I've got to get them to grow because
pressure.
No pressure, Rosie.
Oh god. Okay, Cleome then.
It's a weird thing because on the face of it should be really easy to grow. Mm. So yeah, Cleome. Look up Cleome, guys.
Okay.
If you don't.
All right. Cleome it is then.
Very pretty, and they will flower for weeks.
Okay. If you can get them to germinate.
not go and buy them from a plant.
Just buy them. Yeah, of course.
They will just keep going the whole summer.
Yeah. Okay. Second question. As you already know, this season of the podcast is a celebration of women in horticulture. And as such, all of my guests are women in the various different realms of horticulture. And kind of with that in mind, what I wanted to do was have each guest leave a question for the next guest. You don't know who that is, and it's only in the next episode that you find out who your question kind of is for. So the last episode that I recorded was with garden designer and consultant Charlotte Howard, otherwise known as Capability Charlotte, who I'm sure you're aware of. And she has left you a question, which is, if you could do your gardening career all over again, what would you do differently?
Start it earlier, because I just love everything about it. And you can never know everything about it. There's always something different. And you can learn so much from other people. So, yeah, quite simply, I would wish that I would have started it earlier.
Fair enough. Okay, and the last question is, so you won't know who my next guest is, and I'm not going to tell you who the next guest is because it doesn't really matter. But I'd like you to now leave a question for them. But the twist is that you've also got to answer it as well now for me.
Okay, my question is, if you could be a plant what would it be and why?
Oh, I like that. I'm presuming, because it took you no time at all to think of that question, I'm presuming that you've got an answer for this.
Yes.
Okay. What plant would you be and why?
I was hoping you might ask me that. Okay. I would actually be a tree, but I would be a tree with a tree preservation order on it.
Oh.
So that I couldn't. You couldn't knock me down. You couldn't cut me down. I'd be there for as long as that tree was living. But that's above ground. But below ground, I would be spreading my roots and helping all the young trees. Because if you read, there's quite a lot of science now about how trees are joined up with the mycorrhizal fungi, and they sort of communicate with the younger trees. So I would be so useful. And that's what I would be.
You can find out more from Rosie by following her on Instagram at Rosie Posey Irving. And if you'd like to check out one of the Todd tours, which I'd highly recommend from personal experience, then be sure to look at michaelmarriottrosarian.org. And those links are both in the show notes. All the details of their upcoming tours this year are on that website. Join me again next week, where I'll be in conversation with someone else from the world of plants. Until then, do make sure to rate and review on your podcast platform of choice. You can also see what I'm up to in my garden by following me on Instagram at View from the Potting Bench. See you again next week.